Instacart's Deal Week is coming up from December 17th to December 23rd. That means you can get up to 25% off holiday gifts for the whole family from stores like Best Buy, Bath & Body Works, PetSmart, and more. And you can get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Just think of it as Instacart's little gift to you. And while we're on the subject, why not get a little something for yourself, too? Shop Deal Week from December 17th to 23rd and save up to 25% on gifts. Discounts vary. Minimum spend, maximum discount, and exclusions apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, good morning to you. It is Friday. Tick, tock, tick, tock. The clock is ticking toward a government shutdown. Man, if you listen to the mainstream media in this country, you would be convinced that all hell is about to break loose, that Armageddon happens just after midnight tonight. Kim St. Ange, I don't know about you, if you're listening to the network news at the top of the hour, if you're listening to the show that precedes us, the Gordon Deal Show, you would be under the belief that the world is coming to an end tonight when the government shuts down.
Yeah, I found it interesting. Just the way they talk about what would have the impact from a government shutdown, because
yes, I keep
going back to what Congressman Eric Burleson said yesterday during our conversation, that 85% of people won't even notice it shut down. The other 15%, a lot of them like it because they're basically told, hey, go home and we're going to not pay you, I guess, right now, which would be tough. But then you're going to receive back pay when you go back.
You know, anybody who's worried about this, here's the deal. You know, I love having Chad Pergram on the show. He's the chief White House congressional correspondent, I should say, for Fox. And last night I'm watching him on there with Brett Baer, I think it was. And he's like, you know, Chad, what's the real impact? Let's just assume for a moment that at midnight tonight, government funding runs out. And they're not going to have any more funding till January 3rd. What happens, Chad Pergram? Chad says, well, nothing, really. He said that essential personnel, law enforcement, military, all that, still get paid. Medicare, Medicaid, all that, still get paid. They've already processed the payroll for the next round of checks. So any checks that are due will still be paid. He said, effectively, nothing's going to happen because the problem would be fixed on January 3rd, before the next round of paychecks were even due to be sent out. So technically, nobody would lose any money in any of this.
See, the Gordon Deal Show, though, I thought they were saying something about law enforcement would be forced to continue working, but potentially with no pay, which I knew to be incorrect from what we'd learned with Burleson.
I know. Everybody is freaking out for no reason over this. With any luck... And I heard J.D. Vance say this. I've got the soundbite here. I'll play it for you at some point this morning. With any luck, this thing shuts down tonight. It's not on the Republicans. It's squarely on the shoulders of the Democrats. I've listened to Claire McCaskill say she's got the talking points. Oh, this is that evil Elon Musk. He's a billionaire. He doesn't care if you get paid or not. He's a billionaire. He's clashing with Donald Trump. Blah, 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 blah. Not Elon Musk's fault. And it's also not the fault of Thomas Massie or Chip Roy or Eric Burleson, who were among the people who voted against the second vote they took last night. Like, there's a the Gateway Pundit put out a list. Here's the list of the 38 people who voted against this plan. Like, that's a bad thing. That's not a bad thing. These people, I got to tell you, man, I am this morning in Chip Roy's corner. What he said yesterday made more sense than what any of them are saying. Chip Roy, for Speaker, that man needs to be Speaker of the House. If he was Speaker of the House and Musk is in charge of Doge and Donald Trump is in the White House, crap would get done. It's never going to get done with Mike Johnson in there when he's willing to make deals with devils, and that includes many people in the Republican Party and a lot, and most of them in the Democratic Party, because all but two of them voted against that deal yesterday, the Democrats, that is. This is much ado about nothing. Right, headed right into the holidays. They just need drama. That's what they need. So I would just say that you don't have too awful much to worry about. We're going to get you several reports on that this morning. We're going to check in with Jessica Rosenthal from Fox News Radio coming up in the next hour. We got some tickets to give away to Toto in the 7 o'clock hour. We're going to talk about this new report on Joe Biden. There was a report overnight that Kamala Harris had to cancel her vacation and rush back to Washington for some reason. Joe Biden had to be rushed back from Delaware. Nobody's quite sure what's going on in Washington, D.C. Madeline Rivera with Fox is reporting live outside of the White House. We're going to go check in live with her this morning. And we're also going to talk about what those interest rate cuts, the effect they might be having on the real estate market and the mortgage market. So we got lots of great stuff for you in just a few minutes. But first, Ethan, let's get to this morning's top stories.
I'm just going to let you know, Mark, I'm going to play Bill O'Reilly as your last one since I killed your PC.
Oh, thank you. My computer is dead. It's DOA this morning, but go ahead.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
When I got through cancer about 12 years ago, I made my promise to my kids that I would do everything I can to save this country. And what we're doing right now is to continue to double down on the things that are destroying the republic.
That right there, right now, Chip Roy is making the most sense of just about anybody in Washington, D.C. Can I just tell you that? He's been through cancer. He said, I've survived this. I'm going to go to D.C. and I'm not going to do a single thing to hurt your future, like adding $5 trillion to the debt ceiling.
And the plan is to put the border security and some defense components of reconciliation out first, and then follow it up with the tax component.
No. All at once, ma'am. All at once.
I love it. That's Larry Kudlow. Larry Kudlow, who worked for Trump for years, saying to this United States senator, no, we don't want this in stages. We want the cuts now.
Even though this vote would push the debt limit to 2027, it in no way reflects any lack of enthusiasm on our part to get about those serious cuts for the American people. We have to have fiscal responsibility as a core principle of our party.
I've just about lost confidence in that guy. That's Mike Johnson. I don't know how long he lasts as Speaker of the House. Somebody floated the idea of Elon Musk as Speaker. That will never happen.
If she had tried to convince Cassidy Hutt to testify a certain way in front of the J6 committee, then this woman violated federal law.
Yep. Bill O'Reilly, you probably recognize that voice. We'll do it live. That's Bill O'Reilly, former Fox anchor. He's saying that he thinks they should go after Liz Cheney.
Do you think they actually will?
I don't know. I think they'll investigate whether or not she tampered with a witness. I mean, that woman's testimony was key to that J6 committee reaching some conclusion that Donald Trump had something to do with the break-in at the Capitol, which he didn't. It's silly. Silly season. But it was a very biased report, and they needed a star witness, and there's evidence that Liz Cheney coached this woman on exactly what to say before the committee. If that's true, that's witness tampering. Now, I don't know the legalities of whether or not the DOJ can charge somebody for that. If it's a, you know, Congress is kind of its own beast, and it was doing a committee hearing in its own house. It's not quite like it was in an actual courtroom somewhere. I don't know the legality of it. But if they find out she tampered with it, they can at least make a lot of noise.
So here the question would be then, yes, will Biden preemptively pardon
maybe,
her?
Maybe. He's out of it, man. He is.
Did you see that report that yes, came out where it was the Wall Street Journal, I think, originally posted talking about how his staffers knew from day one when he took over as president that he was not there? I mean, we knew some details of this, but I feel like this is more evidence that everybody knew, including Kamala Harris, obviously, who denied it up until, what, a couple months ago when she was asked by some of the networks during those interviews about covering up his lack of mental
acuity.
Yeah. Oh, no. He's fine.
So Kim, I know that even before you joined the show, you probably listened every chance you could. But I just want to point out, that, in case you missed this, back in November of 2020, elections up in the air. It's unclear who won, who didn't win. Democrats are claiming victory. We saw the big spike. Everybody's claiming Joe Biden won because millions of votes were miraculously found in the middle of the night. Heading into January 6th and then January 20th when he was sworn in, I said this repeatedly on this show. We are about to witness the greatest cover-up in the history of this country in the presidency. Joe Biden is a vacant shell. He is a Trojan horse who's being manipulated by the people around him. In fact, technically, he's not running things. He's being told what to say and manipulated like a puppet. And the question will be similar to the Watergate question. What did they know about his mental condition, and when did they know it? And lo and behold, it has taken 4 years for the mainstream media to finally come to that same conclusion. I know. Let me pat myself on the back. I'm hurting my arm here. What the hell took them so long? Where you been is the question I would ask this morning. All right, Ethan, let's get to the fray this morning, I'm assuming, right?
It is the fray.
All right, don't want to disappoint anybody.
There's some ketchup flying tonight because Donald Trump looks tiny right now, and he hates to look tiny. He looks small compared to Elon Musk. Everybody knows Elon Musk did this, and Trump just said, hey, me too, at the end of the day. And secondly, once Trump weighed in, he has been flying high. He's been saying, everybody loves me now, and everybody's in love with me. I'm the Time Man of the Year. He can't even get his party to vote for what he wanted them to vote for.
I have to tell you how much I'm enjoying watching the liberals squirm over this whole thing. I told you this yesterday. You can listen to me or you don't have to, obviously. The talking point memo that went out from the Democratic Party yesterday was blame this on Elon Musk. Try to make Donald Trump think that Elon Musk is greater than him. He hates feeling small. These are words we want you to use. Donald Trump is less than Elon Musk. This is Elon Musk's problem. He was leading the fight, not Donald Trump, blah, blah, blah. Come on, folks. I know you don't buy any of that garbage. But MSNBC, CNN, ABC, CBS, all of them have been playing that angle since yesterday. In fact, this morning on the way in here, we're listening to that Gordon Deal show there and on the way in, and I'm listening to them report off the top. 0-2. The Republicans are now 0-2, and the government is just hours away from a shutdown. Well, the Republicans aren't 0-2. Mike Johnson might be 0-2 because he struck a deal with the devil. But what conservatives said to Mike Johnson, to to Chuck Schumer in the Senate is we're not going to do this. We're not playing this game anymore. Mm-hmm. Chuck Schumer's not going to hold us hostage and give himself a pay raise and waste billions of more dollars. We're done. And the person that said that best out of any of them was Chip Roy. I love me some Chip Roy. Can I just tell you that? This guy is absolutely fantastic. And I want you to, I want us to go to that bite this morning. Listen to cut number three. It was my favorite soundbite from yesterday, because you want to get mad at the people that voted against the second try yesterday. Don't get mad at them. They're on our side. These are the good guys. They're not against Donald Trump. What they're saying is we want to cut spending at the same time and not raise the debt ceiling and add trillions of more dollars to the debt. Go ahead.
When I got through cancer about 12 years ago, I made my promise to my kids that I would do everything I can to save this country. And what we're doing right now is to continue to double down on the things that are destroying the republic. We are going to increase the debt ceiling, not just $4 trillion, that's false. We have spent $4.7 trillion in additional debt in the last 19 months. We're going to increase the debt by $5 trillion. That's what's going to happen right here by Republicans, increasing the debt $5 trillion. And what are you doing in the same bill? $110 billion unpaid for, because you never have any ounce of self-respect to go out and campaign saying you're going to balance the budget, and then you come in here and pass $110 billion unpaid for.
I love his passion. I got to tell you, he's not mad at Donald Trump. What he's saying is, and Laura Ingraham got on him last night. She goes, yeah, you say that, and I'm with you, but it never works. And he's like, that doesn't mean I'm going to quit trying. Somebody's got to stand up and say, we're not spending anymore. Somebody's got to be the adult in the room. Somebody's got to be the dad who stands up and says, I'm sorry, checkbook is closed. We're not going to the mall this afternoon. We're overdrawn in our bank account. We'll be back in just a minute.
Fighting and winning. The Mark Cox Morning Show. Kim on a whim.
Here's a question specifically for all the guys out there. If you're in a relationship, especially if you're married, how do you think things should be split up financially? Would you be okay with 100% financially supporting your spouse? Is that how it should be? Do you think it should be 50-50? Because that's been quite the debate. And there's a debate that's gone viral on TikTok, of course. But it is really sparking a lot of debate over how this should be split with couples.
I didn't know this was a debate. Here's the deal. A long time ago, my wife graduated from Mizzou with a degree in journalism. She worked as a newspaper reporter for several local organizations. Lost her job here, moved to South Carolina, got a job there. That's where she and I met. I was working in television news. We got engaged. We got married. We moved back here. There was a hiring freeze on at the Post at the time. We decided we wanted to start a family. At that point, we made the decision that we were going to adjust our budget to live on one income because it was important to us that she stay home with the children. It was more important to us that she do that than us have to pay daycare and all. It was just a personal decision we made. It's not judging anybody who doesn't make that decision. So I don't know that I've just never thought of that as a debate. It's either something you make a commitment to and you want to do, or you don't. People out there who expect their spouse to pay all the bills?
Well, I don't know if it's all the bills, but quite a few bills.
Wow.
The video I was talking about that sparked this viral debate was somebody who went and asked American men this question, and then they asked the same question to Russian men. And I want to play this video, and I'll warn you, you hear obviously the American men talking, but then the Russian men, they're just speaking in Russian, and then you have captions. So I actually have to read it to you, but it's worth me playing. Listen.
For their woman.
Well, it just depends, you know. Number one, why would I? But what is she doing while I'm working?
That one was the worst.
You know, it's kind of like each relationship now is a 50-50.
If it's my wife, the Russian guy, if it's my wife, then yes, because ultimately I'm responsible for her.
Nah, she has to provide for herself.
Nah, man.
If it's my wife, it's about family and children.
Семья это дети, конечно, в идеале, чтобы она уделяла.
She should be dedicating 100% of her time to raising them.
Well, wow. I mean, I would want it to be 50-50. That's the current situation I have. Right?
Is that not what you hear more often than not is 50-50? I hear that from a lot of women. They want it 50-50. But what I find very interesting is, I'm not trying to pick on men, but let's just say some of these American men who want it to be 50-50. I feel like they say, oh, well, I want you to also work. I want you to share the bills, all of the things, but also I'd like you to be the primary person raising the kids. I'd like you to be the person who's responsible for cleaning the house, all the things, but they still want you to be a 50-50 partner. And the same goes for women. Women say, oh, 50-50, and I want to be an equal partner, but they want the man to be sacrificial and do all of these things for them. It just, in my opinion, does not work like that. I think there's been such a shift in our culture, and I would argue that it's the man's job. It's his duty and honor to be able to support the family financially. Look at me. Here I am working. I love this job. But my husband's the primary breadwinner, and I still care for our son the majority of the time, right? This job is amazing for many reasons, but one of the best parts of it is that it allows me to still be a mom most of the day. I can get him by, you know, as early as I want. I still have him in the majority of the day.
Right.
I still do a lot of the housework. He, of course, helps, but it's primarily me because I have more of the day off. It's just funny to me when I hear this debate and people get so angry when you suggest that, you know, it has to be 50-50, and then it's just,
I almost
we've swung
feel
the pendulum
like,
too far. I'll
yeah,
say it like that.
I almost feel like I'm so far removed from that debate that I don't even, I can't really wrap my brain around it. I mean, here's the thing. You're if you're in a relationship and both sides aren't giving 50-50, it may not be 50% of the money, but it's 50% of something, right? If you're not, I mean, if you make $1 million a year, it may not be necessary for your spouse to work, whether you're the male or the female making that amount of money. But what are they bringing to the relationship? Are they good about keeping the house clean? Do they make sure that they're paying the bills? Are they mowing the grass? I mean, you got to feel like it's a partnership, or what do you have? Do you have somebody sitting on the couch eating bonbons all day while you're out working? No.
Are bonbons still a thing?
I don't know. But I don't know. Chocolate covered cherries. Whatever. You can't do that. No, but no relationship can exist like that.
Well, I agree. Just because you're not working, and just because I'm suggesting that the man, in my opinion, should be more than willing to support his wife financially,
right,
100%, doesn't give the woman the excuse to be like, all right, babe, I'm going to go hang out at the pool all day. I'm going to do nothing. Like, if you have that mindset, that's to me just laziness.
Well,
but
right.
So I think you're right. 50-50 can look different, but it doesn't certainly does not mean that you have to be splitting the bills, splitting everything.
It's about to me, it's pretty simple. Both sides commit to the partnership. It's a partnership, right? Whether it's a marriage or you're living together, it's a partnership. If you're in this thing together, this radio gig has been good to me. And television news paid my bills for a long time, and now I'm happy to get to do what I'm passionate about and get paid to do it. But if they decide at the end of this contract that they don't want me anymore, you may see me bagging your groceries at Costco. I mean, I'm a worker. I've worked since I was 14 years old at an amusement park. My mom used to have to take me and drop me off. So that's just ingrained in me. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know who I don't know who those people are that's not ingrained in. You're out there working every day, whether you're lucky enough to get to do what you love like I do, or something you might hate, which is bagging groceries.
Well, there's obviously lazy people around the world in every country. But it does seem as though it's more pronounced in America. I mean,
right.
Look at the difference in this video, which, by the way, can I just point out, I know you only heard it, you didn't get to see it, but they picked very, like, feminine-ish men. Okay, that was just weird for the American men.
Really?
It seemed like that.
Not masculine just, guys?
You know, like the Russian guys seemed like, ugh, you know, and the American guys just didn't. And maybe that speaks to another issue that we have here in American culture.
That sounds like some Russian collusion you got
going on.
Don't
you? Yeah, that's exactly
what it is. Ethan?
Ethan's just laughing.
Maybe our studio's been wiretapped by the Russians. That's why everybody can hear us during the commercials.
Sorry, everyone.
Something definitely is going on.
Yeah. Don't you think that that's just that it's our view on that separates us from a lot of other countries? That a lot of other countries wouldn't even think about that. Their mindset is you get married, the guy goes off to work, and he's providing financially, and the woman stays home. Again, I'm not saying
in a lot of places
that
it is
Marge,
like that.
Marge on Facebook is saying everyone has to do what works. I get that. I think my point in all of this is it's interesting to see the difference in opinion from the Americans versus the Russians on whether you'd be willing to financially support, whether that's what you decide to choose or not to do or not. That's one thing. But the question being, do you think that's OK? And the American guys are like, no. She should provide for herself. 50-50. Has to be 50-50.
I don't know. I have a hard time relating to it. It's a sacrifice. If you decide.
Well, but your wife does stuff.
Oh, no, absolutely. So, but so I'm just saying in terms of if you have to sacrifice and agree that you're going to bring in less money as a couple if one of you decides to stay home and raise the kids at the end of the day, unless you're married to somebody who's making, you know, $250 a year, you're going to have to sacrifice something. Mm-hmm. And for us, that sacrifice was it was easy. We wanted her influence over the children at home when they were young, before they went off to preschool or kindergarten. And then she went back to work after that for a while. So it's just the way it is. And now she works full time, but from home.
Mm-hmm.
So you make those things work.
Agreed.
You make it work. You make it work for you, but I don't think there's any pressure. I just don't know. They talk about people who are deadbeats. Don't be a deadbeat.
There's plenty of deadbeats.
You shouldn't want to be taken care of. You should want to produce something.
Well, that's why we need to stop emasculating men and stop trying to act like they should be more feminine and it's okay that they cry all the time. Guys, if you want to cry, like, I'm not saying you can't ever cry, but if you're crying every day, that's a problem. Like, you need to be men. You're the leaders. At least that's my belief.
Listen to this woman. I'm telling you.
Maybe I'm being harsh, but it's time for the men to man up. It's time for the women to stop trying to have this competition with the men of like, I can do anything better than it's that I feel like that's just blown up in society. And it's this constant battle between men and women on who's better and who can do this and who can do that. And women trying to prove to men that they're better and da 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 da. And it's just it's exhausting. Women are incredible. We can do a lot of things. I'm not trying to diminish that. It's this competition, though, I think, is what's gotten out of hand.
Can we just reach the conclusion here that things have gone to hell in a handbasket? Because now we can't even define what is a woman. We have Supreme Court justices who don't know the answer to that. So how, you know, it's all intersex now.
I'll tell you what, I really enjoy watching those Charlie Kirk videos on Instagram of him going to the college campuses and debating the students, because
yes.
One of the most common debates
is classic.
What is a woman? And they can't, it's whatever you want it to be. He's like, okay, well then can I be a giraffe? No. Well, why can't I be a giraffe if I feel like a giraffe that day? Why do you get to say you're a woman just because you put on a dress and you start taking hormone blockers? It doesn't work like that. And it's so funny because these people, I listen to them and I'm like, I want to know the inner workings of your brain and how you're justifying what you're saying, because it sounds like gobbledygook.
Kind of warped. It's kind of warped. It's pretty amazing. Interesting. It's an interesting conversation. It's just one I haven't thought of in a long time, but it's definitely still out there. There's no doubt about it. By the way, if you didn't hear yesterday them covering the story about what in the hell has happened to Joe Biden, and why was the mainstream media acting like there was nothing going on? Who is going to, the test has been, who will be the first one to stand up and say, hey, by the way, the emperor has no clothes? Who was going to do that? Because we've been screaming it for 4.5 years. We'll be back in just a minute.
It's the biggest scandal in America. And the level and volume of people who dedicated themselves to lying to everyone at home about this man's condition for four straight years up through this summer is breathtaking. It's a scandal of epic proportions, and it's a fair question to ask, who is running the country, who has been running the country? And as I said earlier, if you're worried about Donald Trump's advisors having influence, for the last 4 years, apparently, this president, duly elected, but this president was not capable of fulfilling the duties of the office. And his staff and the White House lied about it and kept it from the American people. It's an absolute scandal.
They knew about it, and they hid it from the American people. You know, to those of us in on the conservative side of media, this is the most maddening story of the year to me. This is the most maddening story of the last 4 years. They knew it and they said nothing. Joe Biden has been a confused, blubbering mess for years. Even when he was running for president in 2020, he was a confused mess. They used expertly COVID to hide this mess by keeping him in the basement, by not letting him do one-on-one interviews. They were able to manipulate their minions in the mainstream media into covering up for this, all because Orange Man bad. They were willing to go to any lengths to find somebody that could beat Orange Man bad. And how they settle on Joe Biden, I have no idea.
No, he's Uncle Joe. He was the cool guy with Obama, who I feel like people really liked. He was the guy who would walk out with his aviator glasses on, kind of the guy who couldn't hurt a fly. I know there were other things going on. I'm just saying, I think that was, especially if you were on the left, I feel like that was the perception of Joe Biden at that time.
Yeah, but you know, we've talked to a number of people over the years who are White House correspondents, and we've asked that same question. A few people were willing to ask. The White House always deferred. They always made excuses. But it was so obvious to anybody who was watching. They wouldn't let him do news conferences. Donald Trump does an hour and a half answering any and all questions from everybody. They were clearly hiding this guy's oncoming dementia. And it's just a joke to claim they weren't. So finally, this Chris Cillizza, he worked for CNN up until 2022. He finally comes out on social media yesterday, 4 years later, 2 years after he left CNN, and admits after reading the Wall Street Journal report, pointing out all the ways they've tried to cover for him and how bad it really is. This is what he admits 4 years later. Go to cut four.
As a reporter, I have a confession to make. I should have pushed harder earlier for more information about Joe Biden's mental and physical well-being and any signs of decline.
You think so, Chris? I'm a reporter. I should have asked more questions, but and here's his defense, but the White House said there was nothing to see here. And, well, I just took their word for it. Go to cut five.
The White House and the people around Joe Biden were absolutely adamant that suggesting anything, asking the question about whether he was in some physical, mental, or both decline was offensive. How could you? It's age shaming. And I think that impacted me at some level because while I did ask the question from time to time of, you know, not directly the White House, but aides and people around in that orbit, I didn't really push on it, if I'm being honest. Now, once I left CNN and once it became a little bit more clear to me about Biden's age, I think I did write pretty regularly and talk pretty regularly about how I wasn't sure that this guy was up to it. And then obviously after the June 27th debate, everybody, including me, was writing and talking about it.
It took until the June 28th debate for this moron to realize that Joe Biden was a moron.
You know what makes me very upset thinking about is that his spouse, Jill Biden, allowed him to go take center stage, really on the international stage, and quite frankly, make a fool of himself.
She knew this,
and she allowed her husband to go do that. I'm not, ultimately, I guess he gets to make that decision. If he's sitting there saying, I'm fine, she can only tell him no so many times. But surely this debate was had prior to him taking that, even running for office.
I'm sorry, but you know, you and I are in very public roles here. If at some point my wife needs to be the one to step up and say, all right, Mark, I was listening to you on the radio the other day. You've lost your marbles. It's time for us to call it, right? We're going to pull you off the radio. I would hope that she would stand up for me at a time when I couldn't and make that call. Jill Biden has failed that test miserably for her own personal gain. It's sad. It really is sad. Oh, boy. All right. Coming up in the next hour, we'll talk to Jessica Rosenthal on what happens next with the big government shutdown. We'll be right back.